Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, promo code STAPLE20.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Girl on Girl, where every week I like to get vulnerable on all things queer with all of you. Today, I am so excited because I have a special guest, queer, non-binary Canadian author Caitlin Galway. Caitlin's work is haunting and deeply human, transporting readers across decades and countries. Their upcoming short story collection, A Song for Wildcats, releases May 6th, and it is definitely a collection of short stories that will stick with you. With stories that weave together infatuation, queerness, rebellion, and the ghosts of history, Caitlin crafts worlds that feel both eerie and intimate. In this episode, we get into it all. Caitlin's writing process, the various themes in A Song for Wildcats, and what it means to capture queer narratives in such an authentic way. Now, here's a little bit more information about Caitlin. They are the author of the novel Bonavere Howl and, as I mentioned, the short story collection A Song for Wildcats. Their work has appeared in Best Canadian Stories 2025, Event, Gloria Vanderbilt's Carter V. Cooper Anthology, House of Anansi's The Broken Social Scene Story Project, The Ex-Puritan as the 2020 Morton Prize winner, Riddle Fence as the 2011 Short Fiction Contest winner, and on CBC Books as the Stranger Than Fiction Prize winner. Caitlin, thank you so much for being a part of the Girl on Girl conversation. I hope you all enjoy this, and please, please, please support Caitlin and purchase A Song for Wildcats. Now, let's get into it. Welcome to Girl on Girl. I know you mentioned you've listened to a few episodes. For all the listeners who may not know who you are, can you please tell me who you are, how you identify, and what you do?
My name is Caitlin Galway. I identify as queer, non-binary. She, they is fine. Either is fine. I'm an author, I'm a language instructor, and I'm an editor. My whole world is filled with books and language and stories. And I have a short story collection called A Song for Wildcats coming out in May.
That is so exciting. A Song for Wildcats explores many themes. There's themes of infatuation, there's grief, there's violence, resilience. What initially drew you to these themes, and how did you approach writing them?
Well, when I first started writing the collection, I didn't have any particular theme in mind. I had put out a novel called Bonavere Howl, and I was sitting down and writing the next thing. And so the idea just sort of came to me for the first story. And I'm a very intuitive writer. Sometimes people map stories out. I don't. I sit down and I just kind of feel around in the darkness and see what happens. And that the first story was called The Wisp, if anybody decides to read the collection. And I remember after the second or third story, just seeing how the same types of themes came up in different ways. Grief, trauma, healing, family relationships, intimacy, isolation. So these big, broad themes, but they kept coming up in very different ways that fascinated me. And I fell into each story with this new excitement about how to explore these ideas in different ways, because I only get excited by a story if I don't know how to write it when I start it. I'd like to really challenge myself with a kind of big question, big, like structurally or thematically, like what is it going to be? How is it going to form itself? And those connective themes, that connective tissue that holds the whole collection together, they fascinated me because they're the biggest feelings and biggest questions that we have as human beings. And what we talked about a little bit before, the metaphysics of just existence, I find it incredibly fascinating. What actually constitutes violence? What constitutes love? When we actually think about what love means, what are we talking about? What are we talking about when we say lonely? And so each story is a kind of exploration of that. And nobody has to know anything about philosophy to understand any of the stories, but there is that philosophical element where the characters aren't sort of just falling in love or feeling grief or experiencing trauma or trying to heal, there is always this sort of obsessive question of what does any of this actually mean?
Hopefully
people resonate with that.
I was going to say that. Like, I think that's just the whole human experience of trying to discover, like, what does all of this mean? So I think many people will definitely resonate with that. I wanted to talk about where the stories take place, because they take place in like very historical and like different geographical settings, like post-war Australia, there's France, Ireland. What was your research process like, and how did you decide on these particular settings for the stories?
So the research process is one of my favorite parts of writing, because I am an incredibly obsessive person, just completely, just absolutely just drowning in the research. So it's day after day, month after month of reading obsessively about everything that I can about a particular place. And I find it really fun. And it's funny, I don't really decide the location. It sounds so flaky to say, you know, like that we just like following the process, but it is true. I am being genuine when I say that. It's kind of like just feeling around in the dark and what feels right, or following an instinctive pulse, and something will just occur to me, almost like a memory. Or I'm writing a story and I'm trying to figure out where should this be? What am I seeing? What am I feeling? And then I have the idea, but it feels like I'm remembering it. Like that's how I know it's right. I'm like, oh no, this is where it's supposed to be. This whole time it was supposed to be here. I just needed to remember that. That's sort of the way that it feels. And as soon as I lock into that idea, so much starts to click. Just rapidly clicking, all themes and imagery and an atmosphere just falls perfectly into place. But I'm always very surprised, because it's very rarely a place that I've ever had any strong interest in before. And then I become obsessed with it for a year of my life out of nowhere.
Yeah, that's super interesting. So it's kind of more like a gut instinct or something that just draws you to a place, but it's not something you anticipated. So that makes it really exciting.
Yeah, I'm always very surprised by like Corsica, France, I'd never thought of in my whole life. And then I saw something, I think it was a picture in a book, and I'm like, that's the place. I know it. And now I'm obsessed with it.
That's so cool. So it's good to know, like with your writing process, you do a lot of research. Like is that a part of the process? Okay, cool.
Oh yeah.
Of course, this being Girl on Girl, we're a queer podcast. I wanted to talk about how the stories do feature characters like navigating queer love and identity with these like larger societal conflicts. How do you see queerness intersecting with these like historical moments in your writing?
That's a really good question. Nothing was intentional. I didn't sort of set out thinking this is going to be my reflection on queerness in relation to this time period or what was happening. But it, like everything, it just sort of ends up connecting in some way, and then you start to see it, and then you can reflect on it. And that for each story, it'd be very different. I know that for the first story, A Song for Wildcats, the title story, the character is comfortably gay. For the 1960s, is comfortably gay, with like, he's okay with himself. So it's not a struggle to come to terms with his identity, but it is if you haven't read The Symposium by Plato, it's my response to that. I read it and I fell in love with it. And I wanted to write about, I just wanted to write a story that explored some of the ideas that were in that piece. And queerness in that story is sort of, it's present, and the two main characters are queer and they are falling in love and they're reflecting on like the meaning of love. So it's not that particular case, it's not so much a response to the times, because I didn't want it to be a story about coming to terms with sexuality. I wanted the narrator, the main character, to already have come to terms with it. And for the second character to be coming to terms with it, but not with a great deal of anxiety. I wanted it to be a very peaceful, kind of healthy, wholesome love that is complicated because of the time period that they're in and having to be a little bit careful, and also a philosophical exploration of the meaning of love. Now, for some of the other stories, the time period plays a little bit a more complicated part or a more significant part. Like one of the stories, there was a character who was clearly queer. Anyone reading it would be like, girl, you're gay. But she does not want to be. So that's the one story where there's real anxiety about queerness. And it's not just that, it's her mental health. It's the 1930s. So the fact that she was mentally ill in her small town, the fact that she was quote unquote strange in her small town, all of it comes together to sort of play on like the ideas of the witchy woman and like a small, small rural town. And then the characters in the Australia story, in the Lyrebird Spell, they're in the middle of nowhere and they're 12 years old. So they don't have really any concern for what other people might think about how queer they might appear. And I wanted to give them that kind of freedom. So queerness is present in many of the stories, but in ways that are very different. And my approach to them was very different. Like there's a lot of freedom for some of them. I only have that one poor girl who's really struggling with it.
I absolutely love that. And I love how all of them have these different experiences, because I think a common narrative we see a lot with some queer stories, and I think many people have talked about this, is that there always seems to be like an inner struggle that they showcase the characters facing. And a lot of it is they're struggling with their queerness. We see it in a lot of our movies today, TV shows. There's always like, when there's that queer character, they're always kind of struggling with their queerness. So sometimes it is a breath of fresh air to kind of see that that doesn't always have to be the case, and that's not everybody's story. But with your stories, it's more of like, with certain ones, there's the societal aspect, or there is that one with that girl who's like, I don't want to be queer. So I like how it's touching on these different aspects. That's really fascinating. Were there any like specific books or films or even any personal experiences, if you're comfortable sharing, that inspired you to write these stories?
Well, I think that because I am a very instinct-based writer, I don't think about my own experiences. Like when I'm writing, I'm not thinking, this is going to be my take on this experience, or this is how I'm going to deal with it. I'm a very meticulous editor. So you have to be, it's not just kind of winging it. There is absolutely a conscientious craft involved. Everything is pulled from your experiences in some way. And when I look at the collection, especially from a broad view, especially when it was done and I was looking back at all of the stories, I was going, okay, I think we can see what you haven't gotten over, or what you're still upset about, or what you're dealing with. And I absolutely pulled from my own experiences, definitely. And there are plenty of experiences that are representative of my, or plenty of stories like, or experiences by the characters that are representative of my experiences, but through a completely different lens, or changed in such a way, partially to protect people in real life and to protect myself. I don't want them getting mad. But like a feeling, like, you know, coming from a childhood that was quite filled with difficult situations, as is the case for many people, I didn't want to repeat those experiences. I didn't want to go, okay, well, that's a snapshot of what happened to me, so I'm going to just replicate it here, which is fine if someone wants to do that. That's not a criticism of that at all. But I wanted to go, well, how did I feel in that moment? And how can I atmospherically and sort of viscerally replicate that feeling in a completely different way, so that it's not going to look like what happened to me, but it's going to be that feeling that's going to permeate the scene. And so someone will understand how I might have felt as a little girl when that happened, but it's not going to look like it. They're not going to look the same. So everybody's protected. And I'm not sort of just, I want to be imaginative. I want to have my own fun with it, which is in a strange way, it's very cathartic, but you can write these like very difficult scenes that are pulling from these very painful experiences, and you can have a big smile on your face and be having a ball because you're getting to be imaginative about it, and it's cathartic.
Absolutely. And I feel like this is maybe getting into a little bit more like of your personal backstory, but did you have like a specific moment or like a coming out story? Like, what was that like for you growing up?
Oh gosh. It was not good. It was not good. And it makes me so happy to see all of the coming out stories that are very visible nowadays because we have social media, and I work a lot with kids. I help them with the reading and the writing, and I don't know, they can sniff it. They know I'm queer because they all come out to me and I'm like, how do you know? What is it? What is it about me? And they tell me how happy their parents are, and like, oh, I told my mom I'm gay and she gave me a big hug. I'm like, well, that's beautiful. I'm really happy for you. Mine wasn't that. I did not have a pleasant coming out within my family, but I did have a very pleasant coming out within my friends. I don't remember a single friend acting anything but not even just happy for me, but it didn't change a thing. It wasn't, I love you no matter what. They were like, cool, that's great. Like, no one cared. No one could have cared less. And many of them have ended up, you know, coming out themselves. So I don't know if it's a matter of people finding each other without knowing it.
Yeah.
You end up accidentally in a very queer circle. And it's like, oh, we've all been gay, you know?
We've been gay. Yeah. Yeah.
The whole time we were all gay.
That's really amazing. And it's like that chosen family, right? And I feel like that's so important for queer communities, is you find your people in that way and you have that, like, that acceptance. And that's a really beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's one of the best things about being part of the queer community. And obviously that's not the same for everybody. I've been very fortunate to find wonderful friends, and even ones who aren't part of the queer community, just like endlessly supportive and loving. And yeah, I've been very, very fortunate in found family, and I'm very grateful for those people.
Okay, good. That's amazing. And I guess, like, through that, when did you start writing? How young were you?
I'm going to be one of those terribly obnoxious people who says that I began writing from a very young age. I was very, very young. I turned to writing very quietly, I think, as a safe place. I remember just sort of curling up behind furniture, behind couches. And like, I would go into the cupboard under the sink in the bathroom and hide in there. I just wanted some space. I just wanted to be alone where it was quiet and I felt very safe. And I would have my little diary. I think my parents gave me like a stocking stuffer diary when I was really little. And I never wrote. I think I tried to write about my day once. I was like, ugh, that's boring. And so I started writing stories, and I would curl up behind things and in things, and I would write stories, and I just continued to do that just on a grander scale.
Yeah. And I could see how that could be very, like, cathartic or therapeutic for you, because you're kind of like creating these like imaginative, like, scenarios and characters. And it can be like a form of escape, especially for someone who's so young. I think it's beautiful, like, to start like at such a young age. And yeah, this is, I'm just like curious to know, like, your take on this, but what do you think that queer literature does best that, like, mainstream fiction might fail to capture?
Oh, wow.
I know, it's kind of like a big question.
I love that. I've never thought about that before, that queer literature does that. Well, one thing that I really love about queer literature and queer media, television shows, movies, that kind of thing, is the exploration of friendship within romantic relationships and communication and complex dynamics of friendships. I just think that there is something about the queer perspective of that that is so different and so beautifully presented. And obviously you do see that in stories where the characters aren't queer, of course, but there is just something about, I think, particularly queer romances. And I'm not a big romance reader or viewer. I mean, I love a good love story like anybody else, but I find that there is so much communication and understanding of intimacy as safety and intimacy as friendship that you see in these queer stories that I don't really see them in the straight love stories in particular. I mean, I'm sure if I dug, I could find something, but it's kind of like this torrid love affair. But with queer stories, there's a lot of like, really, like, do I understand you? Do you see me? Am I safe? Let's understand each other. And I don't know what that is. I mean, it must be on some level a reflection of queer relationships, because I do think there is so much awareness. Not that the community is perfect, it's far from that, but there is so much awareness of intersectionality, boundaries, communication, trying to understand each other. We have these conversations constantly within queer communities. And so I think it's reflected in our art.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, maybe there's also that, like, that certain element of like discovery that all of us have to face in this way, because we live in such a heteronormative society that we're like unlearning all these things that we were taught, and we kind of like have to, because that's a part of our own process. And maybe there's that like relatability we find within each other, and that therefore becomes like a safe space. But that
I think so too.
That's a really good answer. How do you feel like your experience as a queer author has shaped the way that you write about intimacy and love?
I think in the same way that it has probably affected all the people writing the works that I was just talking about. I think that I think a lot about safety and boundaries and vulnerability and intimacy in a way that maybe I wouldn't have if, I mean, I don't want to assume anybody's thinking, but because it is something that we think about so much and we have to think about, and we have to think about each other's safety in a way that is just not the case for people who aren't part of this community. They have to think about safety in other ways, but this is a very particular type of like sexual identity safety and relationship safety. And it definitely affects how I write the dynamics between queer characters. I'm always aware of this shared vulnerability that they have and this conscious effort to sort of be looking out for each other and looking out for this relationship that maybe doesn't always feel like it's safe.
So we talk about this all the time, and I bring this up at least like maybe once every pod episode at some point, but the demand for queer representation is very real. And I feel like there's a growing demand in the media, but there's also always been a debate on like who gets to tell these stories. What do you think like your take on that conversation is?
I've thought a lot about this. I go a bit back and forth because it's different. It is different than representation of different groups. Obviously, if you have a white actor in a film taking a character who should be a person of color, then you have erased that person. There is erasure and there's no visibility and there's no representation. A straight actor could play a queer character and you're still looking at a queer character. So it is different, but at the same time, I personally don't feel as connected or as moved or as included if there are no queer people involved. Like I recently saw All of Us Strangers, which I loved and I recommend to everybody. It was breathtaking. And I was something about the fact that the director is queer and that Andrew Scott is queer meant something to me because they were telling our stories. You know, it wasn't somebody hijacking it and giving their perception of the queer experience, but very much through a straight lens. Now, I don't know if Paul Mescal is queer. He hasn't openly identified as far as I know, because I looked into this because I had thoughts. I was like, is this going to be another one of those like straight type of, and I don't think he identifies as it. And I didn't need him to. I was like, you know what? I'm not bothered by a straight actor playing this character. But if they had all been straight, I think I would have felt very shoved out of the experience. It would have been like, I don't think that any of you have any idea what you're talking about. So I think that there is a little bit of wiggle room, but it has to be very careful, they have to be very careful with it. With books, it's different because you really just have that one person. And I don't really know completely what my thoughts are because I don't think I've ever read a book about the queer experience by a straight person because I'm not giving them my time or my money. I'm like, why would I even bother? You don't know. You're not going to write this very well. I can already tell you that. So
yeah,
maybe I should give them a chance. I mean, I don't, what is it? The Heartstopper, that big show with all of the adorable, beautiful, sunshiny queer kids. And I can't remember if she's straight or something, but I'm like, but everybody loves it. So even if she is straight, it means something to the queer community. So am I here? Am I right to judge that? I'm not 100% sure where I stand on like queer literature written by straight people.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I didn't even think about if the author of Heartstopper is straight or not. I'm not sure, but looking at the story and how beautifully it's depicted and like visually too, it's just stunning. And then of course, like we have the Netflix adaptation and yeah, because sometimes I don't know if like maybe as an author, are they pulling from like experiences of people they know around them. Like I feel like there's so many ways to get creative, and it could be like, you know, a sibling you have or someone whose like story is so close to your heart that you want to tell that as well. But I agree, it can be a little bit like, I'm also kind of in the middle too, like I don't know, it really depends, because you either want like that person to tell their story, or it's like there's that inspiration that also comes through, and it can be very beautiful as well if it's like tastefully done. So yeah, I think that's always going to be a debatable topic for many people. You're either like in the middle, or Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, it's really tricky. I think very case by case, and intention is important, and care is important. Somebody is doing this carefully, and I mean, if it's just you writing it, but you're writing about people in your life and they're a part of it and they're able to communicate what's okay or what's accurate, then I mean, that doesn't feel wrong to me, even if you yourself as the writer are straight. The issue really comes in when you have somebody assuming that they know what to say and they go, I'm just going to write a love story, but I'm going to make them both gay and I'm straight and I'm just going to do that. And I'm like, well, then you're going to do a pretty poor job and it's probably going to be hurtful. That's a problem. But I find that that's usually not the case. Usually people want to, they have the best intentions and they want to do it carefully. And especially since people are getting called out so much for, you know, lazy stereotypes and that kind of thing, as they should. I think even if people don't want to do the extra work to do it properly because they care, they would do it just out of sheer fear of being called out and canceled.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And like, so cute. Also, I could hear your cat.
Yeah. Alan's here. Hi, Alan. Oh, sweetheart.
That is so cute. We love a little cat appearance on the podcast. I have two cats too. They're probably somewhere. Yeah. Mine's just in their little cactus bed right now. But normally he just jumps like right in the middle of a recording, right on the laptop. So
he's the star. So
yeah, he's the star. So you mentioned that you worked on both novels as well. Like you've done novels and short stories. Like how do you approach storytelling differently in each format?
I don't really approach them differently from the beginning. My novel started out as a short story. And then there was just an elasticity to it. It didn't feel done. I kept pulling at it and it got longer and it got longer and it got longer. And even when the short story was done, I was like, this is actually just like the first part of something bigger. And if I don't feel that, then it's a short story. And when it's done, it's done. And that's the case for most of the stories in this collection. People like friends of mine, family members, people who read the stories as I was working through them, a number of them would ask, are you going to turn this into a novel? Please turn this into a novel. I want more of these characters. I would just say, I actually think that's done. There's nothing elastic here. I think it's compact and that's the story, except for one of them. And that's the novel that I'm working on right now, where I thought, I'm not done with these girls. There's so much more. I can just keep pulling. I've got more to say about them. But it always starts out as a short story.
That's really interesting. Out of these short stories that you've compiled, is there one that, like, when you think off the top of your head, like, this would like be a really cool adaptation into like a TV series or a movie? Like, do you ever think about that? Like, you want to see this on screen?
Oh, definitely. Not even because I think it would be a particularly good adaptation. I think it'd just be so cool to see the characters in your head being played on screen. But I do think there are a couple of stories in here that would be amazing movies. If anybody reads the collection, and I hope people do, the first story and the last story, Song for Wildcats and the Lovebirds Bell, I think would be great movies or like a mini series or something. And I have a bias because I wrote them, but I really do think that they would be very, very interesting to see played out in a visual medium. And they're very character driven. And I think that everybody who's read the collection has fallen really in love with the characters in these two stories in particular. So, I mean, that would be really cool.
That's exciting. If this is like putting you on the spot, you don't have to answer, but have you ever thought of like who you'd want to play these characters? Who would you cast?
I haven't, but now I'm thinking about it. Well, one of the stories, they're kids. So I don't know a lot of child actors, like child actors don't come to mind. Well, no, I desperately want to kind of figure out, like, they're I can see them in my heads, but their features are sort of crystallized to like a couple of like really strong, distinct things that I probably mentioned in the story. But beyond that, they're a little bit vague. So it would be cool to see an actor figure out the essence of the character and then to watch that materialize in front of me as an actual human being. I think it would be amazing.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. I feel like it's just so fun to even think about that too. And I think that's the beauty of like acting as well, is like to see what the actor can, like how they interpret the character and how do they like actually bring that, you know, to life on our screens. What challenges have you faced as a queer author navigating the publishing industry, if you have faced any challenges?
I would say I have definitely faced some. Thankfully, not too many, knock on wood. I remember one novel. There were some issues. I wrote it years ago and I ended up just kind of putting it away. There were some issues with the fact, this was about 12 years ago, so things have changed a bit, but there were some issues with the fact that the two main characters were, they appeared queer, but they weren't romantic with each other. And there were some people who didn't understand that. And that was a bit frustrating because I tried to explain to them, well, queer people can be friends. They don't have to all date each other all the time. That's not actually how that works. There was a non-binary character and there was a lot of, you have to pick a gender. And I thought, they don't have a gender. And you know, in 2012 or something, that was a little bit much for people to understand, I think, some people. And so that was frustrating because maybe something could have happened with this story, but the limitations of other people's understanding, I guess, held it back.
Back to 2012, you're right. I feel like that would definitely be like a, for certain people, like trying to wrap their heads around it. It's unfortunate, but it's like,
let them be neither boy nor girl and let the story just do its own fun thing. And also something I just realized, I saw it on Goodreads and I was laughing about it the other day, and I love Goodreads. So this isn't me criticizing Goodreads or anything. Please don't get mad at me, Goodreads. Please let me be on your platform. But I went to go check something because someone told me that there was a review that they really liked. And anyway, my short story collection, if you look at the tags for it, the categories, it's just queer. That's all they have. Just like gay, queer. I'm like, what about literary? What about short story collection? What about, you know, philosophical or philosophy? It's just queer.
Just queer.
So I actually think I'm going to write them and be like, hey, can we add a few more tags to that?
That's so funny. You're like, there's a little bit more.
Yeah, this doesn't tell anybody anything.
It's gay.
Yeah, just a gay book. It made me laugh so hard. I was like, this is so ridiculous, but it's funny. It's like, that's kind of just maybe somebody was having a bad day and they forgot to finish their job.
That's so funny. Honestly, though, I feel like the queers are probably just looking up gay and they're like, yeah. Give me the content. Perfect.
Yeah, maybe it actually helped me. They're like, there, that book's gay.
Incredible. So you did mention that you're working on a novel, actually, yes. But are there any other upcoming projects or stories that you're working on that you can share with us?
I'm working on a novel. The Lyrebird's Bell is one of the stories in the collection. I'm writing that and turning that into a novel, but I'm also starting a new short story collection and just sort of when I need to take a break from the novel, I'm like, okay, for a few weeks, it's going to be a new story. And yeah, but that's very, very like early days, just sort of figuring out kind of what I'm doing with that. But I think I'm going to be pulling more from folklore. And I'm really drawn to, I hate this, I'm so drawn to America and writing settings in America. And obviously, I mean, I love America. So this is not a criticism of Americans or anything like that. But my big plans of visiting some of these places are being put on hold a little bit. Just so I don't feel like it's not because I think there would be any problems. I've been to America plenty of times and nothing but kindness from the people there. But a little bit tumultuous. So I'm just like, I'm not going to put myself in the middle of sort of this situation. But I am working on a story set in Florida. Sort of a very quiet, strange story, the friendship developing between these two boys along what's called the Orange Blossom Trail, which if you've never heard of it, is a very interesting place in Florida where you just there's a lot of character to it, a lot of character and a lot of history. And yeah, maybe bringing in a little bit of like American folklore, but yeah, it's the very beginning of the very first story of the collection. So it's completely abstract right now.
That's so exciting. Well, I'm glad to get this little insight into that. I'm excited to learn more. And I like what you said too, because there's so many beautiful parts of America. Like one thing my partner and I have been really wanting to do is like explore more of the West Coast in the States, hop over to like Utah and like do that drive, like go to LA as well. I just like scenic wise would be stunning.
It would be. would be incredible. I really wanted to go to Mojave Desert. I wanted to do a whole hike. Oh, I had all these big plans that I will eventually do because I do love America and I will find my way there. One of the stories in A Song for Wildcats includes the Mojave Desert. So I have I fell in love with it and became obsessed with it and I really wanted to visit. But yeah, just sort of driving through the States.
Yeah.
There's something so atmospheric and beautiful and strange about that. I don't know, that experience. And I lived in the States for a little bit. I was in Oregon and I've kind of bounced around and I'm always drawn to it. It's just so beautiful. And I mean, Canada too. I love Canada, but I live in Canada, so I do get a lot of Canada. Going to a place that is so close, but is so different. Mm-hmm. And from one part of the country to the other, it's like you're in a different world. Florida's nothing like, you know, the Midwest.
Exactly.
Yeah, very potent, very atmospheric, so much history, so much story. So I'm going to be probably setting in a lot of stories in the United States for this collection, but at the moment doing it from afar, which is fine. I don't mind that at all.
That's so cool. Where in Canada are you right now?
I'm in Toronto.
Oh, you're in Toronto. Nice. I just moved to Vancouver from Toronto.
Oh,
yeah.
Vancouver's beautiful. You've got the mountains.
I know. I love it so far. I've been here for 7 months now, but I moved in September. But prior to that, I was in Toronto for a decade. So I love the city. I love Toronto so much, but just was looking for a change.
Yeah, that's an exciting change. That's a good change. Very different. Like you still get the city, but geographically speaking, you're in a different world now.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I was thinking. I was like, you feel that difference too, because it's weird. Like, yes, we're across the country, but you can really see it with like the mountains and the ocean. I'm like, okay, I feel like I'm in a whole different, sometimes it feels like a different country.
Yeah. I really wanted to go back to Vancouver. I went years ago and once a year, I like to disappear into the mountains. Just kind of like I did it last year. I went to Switzerland and I just sort of take off.
Nice.
And so I just disappear. I went out to the highest part of the Alps and do like a little mountain village and I just disappear. Just hang out with crows and goats. I did it in Ireland the year before. And with my book coming out, I can't really go that far this year because you have to be available. But I was thinking possibly Vancouver because there are mountains.
Yes.
And I'm not too far.
Yeah, you get that escape too. It's so good for the soul. I was going to say, like, if you were to sum up like a song for Wildcats to someone or someone who's interested in reading it, like what would be that elevator pitch or how would you like describe the book entirely?
Okay, well, I am terrible at elevator pitches, but I do my best. I would say that it is a collection that explores the mind, the unraveling mind, the healing mind. It explores trauma, but with hope. There are no stories that have no hope in them. And the human experience and what it means to live the human experience with stories that really do span decades and go across the whole world and are very distinct in their atmosphere. They're very lyrical, if you enjoy that sort of thing. But yeah, sort of just not just the experiences, but that metaphysical obsession of what are these experiences and what do they mean?
Absolutely. And it's coming out in May. That's when the...
Yeah, early May, May 6th.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really excited.
What advice would you give to young queer writers who are trying to like break into this world?
Oh, gosh. Well, one big thing is read. People don't read enough. I'm one of those like old ladies who just is telling everybody to read more. Read, read, read. But think about what you're reading as well. If you like something, sit there and think about it. Break it apart. What do I like about this? Why is this impacting me? How can I learn from this? Write as often as you can. I know it can be very difficult because everybody's balancing a million different things, but if you want to be a writer, you've got to sit down and write. I've known many people who wanted to be writers and I never saw them write. And I would say that's the first thing you do have to do is you have to be writing. Write, read, but reach out to your community. If there is a writing community where you live, become part of it and learn from the people around you. And I know that I don't want to say, oh, network, you have to network. It's not even just about that. It's about actually being a part of your community. You help others. They help you. You get people read your stories. You read their stories. You end up learning so much from that. And sort of the next thing you know, it's been 10 years and you are a valued member of your literary community. Yeah, no, and I know the same, like within 10 years, if you are starting out, you have to be in it for the long haul. Don't expect to get everything right away. You have to be like, I'm committed to this. It's like a life choice. And just stick with it. But yeah, definitely be part of your community. Go to readings, go to launches, introduce yourself, ask people questions. Don't feel entitled to answers is another thing. But yeah, reach out. Become a part of the bigger picture.
I like that. And I love the aspect of community too, because many people might even like think that this is just a solo experience, or it can feel like as an author, you're kind of in your own head. You're the one like doing this on your own, but there are so many positives and like networking with others around you and them helping each other out. I think that's just a beautiful thing we don't talk about as often.
And it makes you feel less isolated. I mean, I'm a very introverted person. This is the perfect profession for me because I can just do it by myself. But you don't want to feel isolated. It's one thing to be a homebody and another thing to be isolated. Going out and being part of your community reminds you that writing is bigger than you and art is bigger than you. And there are countless other people like you who are also hunkered their desk in the dark at home, introverted and strange. And you end up having these beautiful friendships with people. And also like you can write it by yourself, but you're going to need people to publish it. That's not going to just be you probably. You want to meet people. Some of this short story collection was going to be a hard sell, a very hard sell. Short story collections are hard to sell. And mine are, there are only 5 stories because most of them are novellas. So they're a strange length. So I remember telling myself as I was writing it, well, don't think about that. Just write. It's about the art. Don't think about that. It's going to stress you out. But then when I finished it, I thought, well, now I do have to think about that. And I was really anxious. But there was a writer in my community who had read my novel and we had met, and she reached out and she said, let me read it. And she fought for it to be published. She went to her, like she worked at a publishing house and she was one of the acquiring editors and she fought for it. And she was like, it's going to be a hard sell, but I'm going to go in there and fight until I'm bloody, until I can convince them to publish this because, you know, there's the concern that it won't make money. And she did, she convinced them. She's like, we have to publish it. Now, what would have happened if I hadn't had somebody who was aware of my work and I hadn't met in person before? You want to meet as many people as you can who are well-intentioned and have good hearts and are passionate about art and can see your hard work and your talent and believe in you, because you have to have people who believe in you to succeed in this industry. Mm-hmm. And the best way to do that is to believe in yourself, of course, and to work really, really hard, but to also be a positive contribution to the community itself.
Yeah. And like queer stories are needed more than ever. I feel like that's still just such a constant narrative I hear of like people saying we need more, you know? Yeah. And like, I'm so happy like to read this collection of short stories and like just get immersed into that world, because it's just, I love it. I love a good queer story always. I'm like, I need more queer media in my life.
We do. And we need variation. We need different types of stories. We need so much more queer fiction, and we need it to be allowed to be all sorts of strange, different things. I don't know if you can hear my cats having a fight behind me right now, but Ellen, knock it off. But yeah, we have to have more, and we have to fight for it to be visible, because I mean, I don't even know if anybody in the States is going to be allowed to access my book in a library because everything is being banned and it's terrifying.
Yeah,
but we don't respond by getting quieter. We respond by getting louder. We respond by getting more visible. Maybe that's what Goodreads was trying to do. They were trying to fight for my gayness to be visible. Yeah. But I agree with you. It's so important. And something that I really like about these stories is that we talked about it a little bit earlier, that they do have that very strong queer element, but they are about so many different things. And I feel very strongly that we have to have just every type of literature that has queerness in it. You know, it's not just queer literature. It's literature by queer people, literature with, oh my goodness, Alan, stop it, please. I'm in the middle of something. Sorry.
That's okay.
I don't know what he's doing. So unprofessional, Alan. Everybody who knows me, who listens to this, is going to find that very funny because he's my problem child. But yeah, fighting for visibility, but different kinds of visibility. We have been visible for quite a long time on the bookshelves, but within a very limited capacity, sort of what heteronormative culture, particularly white heteronormative culture, wants to see of us. And I think we have to show them that we can have every kind of story. We can have queer fantasy, queer magic realism, or even just the way that I think of it is just literature with queerness as part of it, the same way that you have literature that has straightness as part of it, because that's through a straight lens. The Great Gatsby is a straight lens. I love it, but it's a straight lens. We don't think of it that way, but that's true. It's just so dominant.
Yeah.
And we have to kind of push against that.
Yes, we definitely do. And I think even seeing novels too, like The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo was one that really, really took off. And like, I think many people appreciated like the queerness behind that story. And I know that's getting like adapted into a series or a movie.
Oh,
yeah, I know, which I'm like, I can't wait to see something like that. But we just need so much more. There's like a hunger for it. And I'm just so excited for your short stories to take off. And when this does release in May, what's the best way for like our listeners to like keep in touch with you, to find you and purchase your book?
Well, you can find me on Instagram. I'm not great at it. I'm doing my best. I am on Instagram. So please come find me. I would love to meet you. I'm very friendly. I have pictures of my cats, whom everyone has now met. The best way to purchase my book would be through your independent bookstores. It's available at Indigo. It's available at Barnes and Noble. All of the big stores will have it. Amazon, you can get it wherever you want. But I would highly recommend supporting your local independent bookstore, because they are a more ethical choice, and they're your independent bookstore. Throw them some help. Dundurn Press is my publisher, so you can also buy directly from them. They're wonderful. And yeah, it's really, really, really easy to find this book. So I hope that you do.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for this conversation, Caitlin. This was so lovely.
Thank you for having me. It's been really, really delightful talking to you.